Welcome to Versus History with Elliot Watson and Patrick O'Shaughnessy.
Good afternoon and welcome to Versus History. I am Dr. Elliot L. Watson and with me is co-editor Patrick O'Shaughnessy. How are you, fella?
Hello, sir. It's good to see you. Summer holidays approaching. Hooray.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, fantastic. Looking forward to that. Now, with us today is Connell Smith, our medievalist, and he's here to talk about somebody about which I didn't know very much.
No, indeed. He's here for our 15-minute frenzy. So just to remind you of the rules, we have 15 minutes. We'll ask as many questions as we can. Connell must stop speaking after 15 minutes, and then he can give his 30-second summary about our takeaways. So you've got 15 minutes, sir. That's what we're going
to
do.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. I just said I was looking forward to it.
He's looking forward to it.
So are we.
Right, so I'm actually going to this week start a timer, so that we can make sure that we stick to the 15 minutes. So, shall we get on with it?
Let's do it.
Right, actually, first of all, who is it that we're talking about?
Let's give him 30 seconds for free, just to tell us who we are discussing, who she is, what point in time. Where are you going?
So, we're talking about a lady called Eleanor of Aquitaine. So, she is a lady called Eleanor, who comes from a region called Aquitaine, which is what an imaginative way that we name her. So she is a lady who lived in the 12th century primarily, so the 1100s, born in 1122, maybe 1124, we're not sure exactly when, but she was born then, lived for 82 or 80 years depending on that, and she dominated much of medieval Europe. She was married to two kings, King of France, King of England. She ruled England as regent while her sons were away campaigning. She was the heiress. She was the most influential heiress in France. Owned a third of France in her own right. So she's a big, powerful, influential woman who dominates much of the 12th century.
Wow. Okay. Right. I'm going to start the 15-minute timer, and Pat, you're going to ask him the first question. Ready? Go.
Connell Smith, medievalist. Why are you interested in Eleanor of Aquitaine? Go.
Well, I first came across her really when I was at university. She's one of those people who, if you're studying the Middle Ages, her name crops up a lot because she's really influential. And just the more I dug into her, the more I found out about her, the more you discover that she's got so many kind of fascinating stories attached to her. She's married to two kings, as I mentioned, so she's got those royal connections. She's imprisoned by her husband for 15 years under house arrest. She goes on crusades. She accompanies her husband on the Second Crusade. She encourages sons to rebel against her husband, the King of England. She rules countries while people are away. She's involved in military campaigns. So she's doing lots of things that just go cut somewhat against the grain of what you'd expect of a woman in the Middle Ages. So she's just got all these fascinating stories. She's arrested by her husband actually while she's dressed as a nun. Allegedly, wow. She's trying to escape. So, there are all of these stories surrounding her that just grab my imagination and fascinate me.
Right, okay. At some point, we need to dig into the why she's arrested and that kind of thing.
Yes.
I first came across Eleanor of Aquitaine actually in a fiction book by Arthur C. Clarke. I think it was in the Rama series, and he spent a lot of time talking about Eleanor of Aquitaine. And I have to say that I can't really remember much about this person at all. And it sounds like she's incredibly interesting. Why is this person important in history?
Well, two reasons. She's really important in history because she's important in her own time.
Right.
So, firstly, in the early stages of her life, she's important because of the accident of birth. So, we're in a time where land, everything is inherited in hereditary terms. She has no brothers. So, therefore, we're in a world where sons tend to inherit the land, but because she has no brothers, she's the oldest child of the Duke of Aquitaine. This is a region in southwest France, which covers a huge amount of territory, but about a third of modern day France. And because she has no brothers, when her father dies, she inherits that land. She has that land in her own right. That makes her the most eligible bachelor in medieval Europe. Nicholas Vincent describes her as a walking title deed. If you marry her, you get this huge swathe of land. So in the early part of her life, she's really important for that, and that gets her way into positions of power, influence, authority. And when she's in those positions, she shows huge amounts of ambition, competence, drive, and is a hugely, hugely influential figure. I mean, the positions that she gains, lent her huge importance. Being Queen of France, being Queen of England, takes a huge active role organising marriages that come to define dynasties. And
so she's Queen of England and Queen of France?
Not at the same time.
Right.
So she's she becomes Queen of France probably around the age of 15.
Uh-huh.
So when the King of France marries her to his son, a guy called Louis, and then his father dies almost immediately, and so straight away, within weeks, she becomes Queen of France from the age of 15. They're married for about 15 years, and it's a somewhat tempestuous, unhappy marriage with no sons, and eventually they get a divorce, which, again, is unusual in the Middle Ages. And then she marries a young chap called Henry, who's only 19 when she's in her early 30s, and he also almost immediately becomes King of England. So she kind of has this knack of getting married to the right guy just before he becomes influential, and then using that position to develop her own power, her own influence, and kind of shape the world that she lives in. So I think that's why it's really important. She's important at the time, but I think she's also crucially important for us as historians to study, because she cuts against the social order. When you look at the Middle Ages, we're used to hearing about men going around doing things, men being the active ones, and women being subservient, not really doing anything. They kind of only crop up here and there. But she really cuts against that, and she in a sense expands and redefines the role that a woman can take.
Wow,
you're doing really well for time and really well for answers. You've got 10 minutes 30 seconds left, and your answers so far have been superb. Thank
you. Very kind of you, Patrick.
Curveball at you.
Yes.
When you say Eleanor of Aquitaine, me thinking with my shopping head on, I'm thinking I'm shopping with my good wife, and she often pops into this shop with a sort of orangey fascia called L'Occitane.
I just wonder where you're
and it costs me a lot of money. It costs me a lot of money when I go in there. Is there any connection? They sound the same. Is there any similarity in the etymology?
Well, Occitan was a language in southern France at this time. So Occitane, I think, is just an alternative pronunciation. So Aquitaine, Occitan, as you say. So I don't know. Maybe the person who founded that shopping chain came from that area or admired Eleanor, similar to me. Who knows?
But don't quote us on that. Thank you. Okay, so what do you most admire about Eleanor of Aquitaine, Mr. Smith?
I think there are lots of things to admire about her. Yes, there's this cutting against the social order, but I think it's the tenacity that she shows within that. Society does everything in the Middle Ages it can to restrict people. Whether that's socially, you've got the feudal system, you can't climb through ranks, etc. But also in terms of your sex, you're very much defined with male roles, female roles, and she doesn't get herself held back by that. She seeks to expand her influence and not let herself be restricted. Also, I think one of the most interesting things that I admire is that she doesn't kind of meekly go into old age. The arrest that we were mentioning earlier, so she's arrested by her husband and put under house arrest for 15 years.
Which husband?
Henry II, so the English,
right, okay.
English king. When she is released from house arrest, we're in 1189. Her husband dies, and her son, Richard the Lionheart, becomes King of England. So again, another part of her importance is the sons that she has. And so she's released in 1189. At that point, she's in her late 60s. So you kind of imagine that, you know, she's had 15 years away from the political scene. She might be letting things wind down, doing some reading, I don't know. But no, look, she comes out and she is at her most dominant in the 1190s, in her 70s. She's crisscrossing Europe. She's arranging marriages for her son. So when her son John becomes king, she goes off and arranges his marriage. Same with Richard. She gets him married to Berengaria. And she's crisscrossing. She's physically going off and visiting Spain. And just the concept of kind of 70-year-old in the Middle Ages crisscrossing Europe, doing these things, I think is something that I really admire, and think that, you know, there's a lot that we can look at and think that's hugely admirable. And within that time period, in the 70s, she's raising money. Her son Richard gets captured on his way back from crusade and is held to ransom.
So she's the mother of King Richard and King John.
Yes. So her She has five sons. Yeah, so she has five children with Henry II. She also has two previously with Louis.
Yeah.
But none of hers with Louis were sons, which was one of the key reasons she has. But then her and Henry have,
Now, I've heard we've got seven minutes left. Pretty much everything I've read about Eleanor of Aquitaine is positive. Is there anything about her that you could target as a criticism?
Certainly. I think it's positive in terms of her influence, because she's so influential. I think the loyalty, perhaps, is one thing that I don't admire, or sometimes the lack thereof. So the reason why she is imprisoned by her husband Henry II is that she supports her sons in rebelling against him. In the early 1170s, Henry II is on the back foot somewhat. Some people might have read about Thomas Becket and the murder of Thomas Becket, and he has to do penance, and things aren't good. But he's got all of these sons who he gives titles to, and they're kind of chomping at the bit. They want to basically take over before the old man eventually dies, and she supports them and encourages them to rebel against her own husband.
That's a weird thing to do.
Yeah, so I think that's something that certainly I couldn't condone. I wouldn't admire. I think being married, loyalty to your spouse is a key thing. So I think that's something that I don't really admire. And it's not just with Henry. It's not that one event. During the Second Crusade, she's the first woman to go on crusade, and lots of aristocratic ladies come along with her.
When you say she goes on the crusade, she doesn't actually fight in any sense.
I imagine not. No, right. I don't think so. But a crusade is also seen as a pilgrimage at this time, so it's not just an armed conflict. It's a visit to Jerusalem, to the holy city. But she goes over there, and her uncle is one of the lords of the area, so he's in Antioch. And he wants to get the crusaders to go and take over a town nearby called Edessa. But her husband says, oh, let's go to Jerusalem and go and do the purpose of our crusade. And she turns on her husband and says, no, I'm going to side with my uncle. So you've got this idea that she sees her husband as somebody who, you should ignore, you can turn against. That's not as important as perhaps some of her other relationships. So I think that's certainly questionable.
Okay, that's
but then you could say her loyalty to her sons is admirable within that. So I think that's something I wouldn't value.
Fantastic. You're doing really, really well for time. We've got just over 4 minutes, so we're going to have to be quick-ish.
Yes.
Obviously, all historical actors are constructs of their context, but nonetheless, if you had to draw some historical comparisons between Eleanor of Aquitaine and others, who would they be and why?
I think it's, like you say, it's always dangerous to look for too many similarities, particularly across periods. I think for that reason, you're probably looking at a similar sort of period. If you look at the Wars of the Roses, there are a huge number of influential women who are doing similar sort of things, perhaps learning from what Ellen's done and replicating that, but certainly pushing the claims of their sons, etc. People like Margaret Beaufort, the mother of Henry VII, she's hugely influential in building his claim, developing that. You've got Margaret of Anjou, who one of our listeners kind of said they'd like a future. She is a fascinating.
Tiglath Pileser, is that right?
Yes, correct.
So she's a fascinating figure. And so I think you can draw comparisons to those people, particularly in the Wars of the Roses, because Elizabeth Woodville from the York, doing similar things, looking after their family, promoting their interests, and keeping themselves as, the power behind the
throne. Could I curveball you, just for maybe someone who doesn't know much about the medieval period? Mm. Is there anyone in the sort of more modern day we could draw a comparison to? I know it gets progressively more dangerous, but is anyone out there?
I think you're looking for somebody who's not in an official position or the primary position, but seeks and develops their influence. So, I don't know, Michelle Obama, somebody who, she's first lady, but in her 8 years in the role, she goes beyond it, carries an influence beyond it, and she still comes top of polls of people who are admired. So, you're right, it becomes very tenuous, but in terms of the developing influence and the power behind the throne, I'd have thought that.
I forced you to be ahistorical. I'm very, very sorry. You've got about just over 2 minutes, Elliot.
I was just going to say, is there any, could you give any credence to the idea that perhaps she set precedents for future heads of Europe, female-wise, and maybe Elizabeth I? Or is that just erroneous?
I think particularly when you look at heads of state, I think not. I think because when you look at somebody like Elizabeth, really, she's trying to portray herself as a king.
Right.
And performing lots of kingly functions. And so Eleanor isn't doing that really very much because she's always defined by having a husband who is king,
right,
or having a son who is king, and supporting those claims. But you can certainly see people doing similar sorts of things. But equally, you've got people before Eleanor doing similar things. Some of our listeners may have heard of Empress Matilda. You have Stephen and Matilda, who have a civil war in the century before. So
Stephen and Matilda.
So you've got that. It's
sounds like a 1980s sitcom.
Oh,
surely.
It's fascinating. If our listeners don't know about it, it is so worth reading. A period called the Anarchy.
That sounds fun.
Sounds chaotic, doesn't it?
Right, we've got 1 minute left before we get to the 30-second roundup. Anybody seeking out more information on Eleanor of Aquitaine, to which sources could you point them?
I think it depends on your interest. If you're just looking to dabble, a casual interested listener, I'd look at, there was a TV series that came out a few years ago called She-Wolves by Helen Castor, which looks at a number of female figures who are influencing medieval Europe. That's a great watch. In Our Time, one of my favourite podcasts, have a podcast all about her, which is 45 minutes long. Perhaps just will add another layer to people's understanding. But if you're looking for really good academic history, Alison Weir's biography of Eleanor is fantastic. And it's called Eleanor by the Wrath of God, Queen of England, which is what she wrote to the Pope at one time. She was Queen of England by the Wrath of God, which I think sums her up in these last 10 seconds beautifully. You know, that tenacity, that ambition, and that she's really not a lady that you want to cross.
This is perfect timing, listen.
Bing! That's 10 minutes done.
There you go.
Fantastic. There you have it, Mr. Smith. Bang on time.
Perfect timing.
All right, then, I suppose all that remains then, you've got 30 seconds. Can you imagine? You're trying to tell a group of people that are intelligent but a bit disinterested why they should care about Eleanor of Aquitaine. Go.
Eleanor of Aquitaine stands above other people from the same period. She cuts against the social order. She doesn't accept things the way that they are. She seeks to dominate Europe, to influence Europe, to advance her family, and she becomes known as one of the most influential people in the period. If you want to look at somebody to admire, to emulate, somebody who sets a pattern for what a woman can achieve within the medieval world, she is the person to look at. You shouldn't look beyond her. There are others, of course, but she is a fantastic example. And if you don't learn about her, you are missing out.
Well, I think I need to go and learn about her.
Definitely. If you don't listen to this podcast, you're missing out.
Absolutely. Well, that is the end. Conal Smith at Prohistoric Man, thank you very much for joining us today and giving us all of your wonderful knowledge about Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Absolute pleasure.
If you've got any questions about Eleanor of Aquitaine, why not tweet him? Make him do some work.
Absolutely.
Always happy.
So that's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me. Thank you.
Oh, and goodbye from me as well.
Thank you. All right, folks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for downloading and listening to this edition of Versus History. Subscribe, visit us at our website, www.versushistory.com.